Orange County? All right, awesome, welcome. How are you doing over here? Where are you from?
Seattle.
All right. New York? Anybody from out of the country? Where are you from, sir?
Canada.
Canada? Well, since I have the floor, I say that Mark is here.
That's not true, you can't do better.
ASU for sure.
Yeah, built a facility on campus. We didn't have a club at the time at our school, so it was really 0 to 100. Just, you know, I don't want to go, my whole background was busy. I believe in the tenets of kind of esports could be aligned with the experience I had as a collegiate athlete, as a soccer player. And I believe those same tenets can be delivered through esports. And that model's been replicated many times now, as we can see. So in 2016, I was hired by an agency, marketing media production agency called Intersport in Chicago, 8 blocks down the road from Robert Morris University. They had an interest in kind of the brand side of esports, as that became, as our CEO read, Staples Center was selling out and Madison Square Garden and such, and brands started asking about esports. So I came on board at Intersport in that regard, while I still maintained more like a consultancy position with Robin Morris University. In 2017, November, the NCAA hired Intersport in response to really them fielding so many questions from their membership of, hey, how do we do esports? What should we do? What's your opinion? Should we have it here? What about this? And you know, they had no point of view, and why would they? So, they understood that they didn't really understand the space, so they hired us. And so, for the better part of 2 years and ongoing, we've been consulting for them. With really the first 10 months of that process was really heavy in research and really to determine attitudinally what was happening on those campuses and what was the intent for adding of varsity and what's the intent for not onboarding or providing support to a robust club, say University of Washington of 2,000 students in an esport club. You know, why not provide them some support as you would, say, other elevated athletics and rec programs? So what we're working on here is I would like to provide, and let me be up front that 100% I do not speak for the NCAA. That is just a disclaimer, and I hope someone's recording that. I do not speak for the NCAA. That's fact. These are my own opinions. I'm providing the some of the data from the NCAA, but when I speak of opinion, that is my own opinion. So that is my 100% disclaimer. So they have enough lawsuits, and I certainly don't want a lawsuit. So if we can get this rolling, we're close. Disclaimer, I can tell you one thing for sure that I think they would probably, not externally, but internally agree with, that the NCAA does not do well is outward messaging. 100% paralyzed. They fear, and this is why, in my opinion, they don't, is they fear that anything that gets put outwardly, publicly, or written, that it has potential to kind of come back to some kind of lawsuit and hurt them. So, but my opinion is, like, we have this data, and again, now it's from November 17 was it started, so it's almost 2 years old, but I think it's important just to get out to understand okay, what was the approach that schools were taking, and why were they taking it, and trying to get understanding of intent. So that was the intro. We're going to take a look at the university ecosystem as it exists or has existed in the past, the background, and some of the data on the data presented, research, reporting, insights, and findings from that data, and then kind of key considerations from that data and the path forward kind of as I see it. So. This is the university ecosystem that exists, and some are here still, some are gone. But really, if you take a look at it, we can break it down over a couple subsets, right? So publishers. So publishers, I think, have deserve. You know, I think everyone it's kind of fun to say like, oh well, you know, Riot or Blizzard is doing this, but like they deserve a lot of credit for cultivating, in my opinion, like this university ecosystem and identifying a group culture on campuses and elevating it by providing support, putting stories on front of clients, and really kind of cultivating and growing over time. I think I probably wouldn't have ever thought of starting at Robert Morris University if there weren't some of those early reports of San Jose State and their community and Major Star League and what they were doing and sort of having those elevated competitive schemes. So nothing happens without that kind of, in my opinion, publisher support to this university ecosystem. Then we also see collegiate leagues and platforms. I would put Collegiate Star League in that space. These are a lot of times enhanced and making, in my opinion, like the space better, but sometimes also makes it a lot more confusing. A couple months ago, there was the ESPN Esports Championship with Blizzard titles, and it was players from some varsity programs wearing ESPN jerseys and weren't able to wear their own jerseys. So it just kind of confounds and confuses, I think, a lot of educators and a lot of provosts and presidents as they kind of look at the space when you see like, oh, well, I see, we could play in Collegiate Star League. We could also play in the ESPN event, and we can also play in the Tesla event. Interesting. When you look at also in the collegiate space, an interesting, somewhat of a current and recent adaptation is the onboarding of esports to some degree of at the conference level. And I think we got some great information from Chris early on. It's interesting to me that the presidents want to have esports in the Big East, and yet the athletic directors don't want anything to do with esports in the Big East. And yet that still remains a viable sort of place to Chris's dismay, because there's just a natural connection point across universities, and there's understood cultures, and there's understood rivalries, and it just sort of feels like a place that there can talk to each other. There aren't really other places where those Big East schools are kind of talking to each other in a regular sort of systematic way. So sorry, Chris, but I think you're going to be stuck with it. And then the recent onboarding of governing bodies and associations, and this is forever changing, and it will probably always change, and be new ones and old ones, and even if you look a little further, there you have like the PACG, which was a student sort of front end of a governing body or an association, which is now gone, and also like the Ivy League, which I don't even know if it's around. As you can see. As if you're a provost at a 150-year-old institution, you're like, okay, esports, it seems like it makes a little sense. And you take a look at this, you're like, wow, I don't know where to start. Like, I'm going to go work on the hospital because that's more of a pressing issue for us. So it's confusing. So when the NCAA hired us, and again, this was in like November of 2017, we decided, hey, at that time there were about 70 formal programs. It's hard to really define what's between varsity and formal. So I think the safest way to say, like, when we use formal, it means if the school is putting any sort of resource or project against esports. So I call it Big East formal program. because Chris is talking to an administrator who is in charge of esports at some level, and there's a lot of disparity between what that means in charge of, right? Some are just giving them t-shirts and letting them play on the weekends. Some are building facilities and having full sort of varsity setups. So what we looked at is across, at that time, 70 formal programs, but we said, hey, let's take a quantitative and qualitative look across a number of different schools. So we talked to about 100 different universities and a number of different conferences, just try to understand what was their intent for onboarding, why did they do so, and what were their motivations. So across that, what we did was really break it down across that space to what their esports involvement on campus was. So we looked at a pool one of varsity programs where they had a full scholarship against players. They had a facility. They had a coach. Pool two was high-functioning esports clubs. Rutgers was a good example of that. Would hold multiple events a year, would have 500 students, would sometimes even monetize against their club by selling some sort of sponsorship. Pool three was high-level clubs, sometimes with governance, but would have zero school support. So not an official club designation, no line items. So like pool two may have, there's no official sort of across school definition of what club, official club is. It varies university to university, so that even makes it more complex. But you can imagine school two, if they have an official club status and you're, as an esports club, you may have like $1,200 to put against your club for the year, and that varies depending also a number of different variables, potentially depending on how many students are involved. But then Jim Belushi there, pool four, is on again and off again programs, which is, for a long time been the bane of collegiate esports, because you have a high level student group that puts all the effort into organizing and running events, but then they matriculate, they graduate out, and then the next group is like, yeah, I don't really want to do that, and then it kind of falls apart until a next student or student group comes in and says, like, hey, we should do some esports, and then it kind of grows again. So the qualitative research kind of looked like this, where we went through a number of different kind of question paths depending upon responses, across three pools, this is where we reached out across all those pools. We talked to three people in athletics, someone in athletics, an administrator, generally the person that's on top of or in charge of their esports group on campus, and then the student lead on that campus. So she had three different perspectives. So, after sending 120 out, we ultimately received 112 unique responses. Resulted in we touched 95% of the schools. That was through some kind of due diligence, and really just trying to figure out again what it is. What is esports? How do you feel about it? What's the awareness of esports activity on your campus? Do you know if there's a community on campus? Do you believe in the esports value that it could be delivered to students on campus? And this is really an abridged version of the data just because of the time. So it was really difficult for me to kind of pick out and sort through what would make sense. But if we look here, has your esports group approached administration regarding a formalized program? And that's not too surprising, right? If you look at, obviously understanding pool one is varsity, so that's been accomplished. But student pool two, again, the high functioning sort of varsity club, they look at the varsity situation developing and they feel disenfranchised. They're like, hey, administrators, why can't we have this similar thing that UCI has or other schools have? If you look at student pool three, again, high-level program, but not a lot of school support, they feel probably a little less ability to have success in those conversations. And pool four is like, well, we have no chance because we barely have a program and it's on again and off again. This is not surprising, right, if you come from the world of college esports, because everyone complains about everything. How do you feel the university support your esports group? Actually, the pool one was very supportive, clearly. Pool two, not pretty low numbers. Three and four, anomaly, that's probably a little higher. And here, when we look at the quantitative, and we use this data then to kind of go back out as we for the qualitative, to form the qualitative reach out, the baseline question, how well do you know esports? So, you know, it's not surprising if you look at student side across the board, it's almost straight sevens because we're talking to student leads of those programs. And what's interesting to me, though, is you look at the descending scores across and through the organizational levels. So administrators of Pool 1 clearly know athletics is a pretty high score because we know that some varsity programs are not in athletics. They could be in academics or in student services. But, you know, declining across Pool 2 and Pool 3 and Pool 4. And those admin scores are higher. The best thinking is that because of general, those students that are hyper-engaged, putting on events, wanting school resources, are constantly in connection and in contact with those school administrators. And this is the one that I believe really is the one of the more important ones that we looked at. So it's, do you believe that an esports program can provide value to students on your campus? And when we look at the student scores, again, are, yes, of course they can because we live it every day and we believe in this and we're super passionate about it. But again, when you see sort of from the quantitative and qualitative across the board, like experiencing firsthand that the value proposition and understanding of athletics and administrators is increased across the pools. Again, Pool 1 is varsity, so the school is all on board. Pool 2, high-functioning clubs, holding a lot of events, are engaged with student administrator, with scholastic administrators a lot. So that recognition point, because they're forced to be engaged of a scholastic administrator, they see that the soft skills that are being transmitted, they see that these students are entrepreneurial and working extra hard to put on events that will just benefit a community on campus, and they rally around the university brand and want to represent the university brand through this kind of unique medium of esports, is interesting to see that value is transmitted through student activity. And again, when we look at sort of some of these collegiate esports insights across the pools, then if you look at, again, Pool 1 is varsity. Varsity esports programs identify significant value and improve structure and organization. So when we talk to esports directors or scholastic leads of varsity programs, they're like, yeah, boy, we sure would like to have a little more organization and a little more throughput of knowing what's happening with our esports program. And then generally, 9 times out of 10, they would mirror it back to traditional athletics and say, we have a 5-year calendar of championships that exist in, say, baseball, and then we can make plans and work backwards off of those national championships year to year, whereas in esports, a lot of times you're not sure who your opponent will be until the week before or 2 weeks before. Sometimes championships in esports switch from fall to spring. Sometimes you don't know until 2 months out of when the championship will be. So it's a little bit of a frustration point for sort of school administrators and varsity programs. Now, I will say that this is a work in process, in progress, and I believe that publishers recognize that and are working internally to try to make improvements in that regard. And in Pool 2, certainly this was shown, I think, in some of the data points, that the largest and most active esports clubs, student leaders feel certainly disenfranchised. And I think it's particularly in light of what's happening in the varsity space outside of what is sometimes their school. And I can use Rutgers as an example of that. Again, while the BTN has sort of an elevated esports conference, you know, those students are still kind of bootstrapping for the most part on their own. They have this massive, robust program that is really active and really great students leading that space, yet, you know, if they look at Robert Morris University, they're like, well, I'm sure they're thinking, like, this is not fair, because they're putting a lot more work into that program than certainly our student athletes are, because they're just able to just come into play. If you look at Pool 3, conferences and universities recognize, congruent, similar values in competitive esports, but are kind of cautious and unsure of how to proceed. There's a lack of sort of esports landscape knowledge, right? They're not sure what it all means, and an institutional consequence? What does it mean for my brand? If I'm Stanford, like I said, we're doing esports. What does that mean to my donor base, everything else? Which leads to trepidation, right? That there's not really a willingness to get in. Now, in my opinion, even back 2 years ago, I believe that, you know, the threat of competition to other schools will sort of accelerate this pace. John, give me the five. I gotta go quick. So we got four findings, really, out of this space. So formalized esports initiatives on campus across the country are driven by university leadership outside of athletics departments, but athletics are generally consulted, right? So if student services, student life says, this is a great idea, Mark Deppy, hey, this is a great idea, this is the way we have a business plan, this is what we could do, still went to athletics, so like, hey guys, this feels like it's probably an okay fit, what do you think? They're like, no thanks, and Mark set up where he did. Not too surprising. Finding two, these are global findings. Four, administrators with an understanding of esports see value for their institution and students through esports participation. They recognize barriers exist, and they also see significant opportunity through athletic departments. I use this as the University of Utah example. So A.J. Dimmick has his varsity program set up in their game design program. And yet, he's like, I'm duplicating everything that athletics is doing every day. I have double the work, and I have to also then run my AEE program. Going quickly through here again. Member institutions have similar ancillary motivations and objectives in pursuing esports, although they are sort of reorganized across the divisions. So if you look at University Division I's and the why, it's like, well, hey, this could be a great engagement tool. We've heard about this golden goose of a student, they're really STEMy and smart, that sounds pretty good. We put so much work into our athletics program, yet these students aren't going. This is a good way to cross-pollinate. Division 2 is definitely engagement retention, and enrollment is a number 2, and Division 3 and NAI is enrollment is for sure a number 1 driver, but also a lot of ancillary benefits. And number 4, and this is, to me, a protected one and one that's really important, is that athletic departments can offer significant support to collegiate esports by creating scale through improved structure and organization, by enhancing campus esports culture and community. So, you know, esports, college esports weren't invented when I said in 2014 we're having a varsity program. There were robust programs, 10 times the size of my program out in the United States, and it's a unique culture that should not be dismissed and should not be destroyed because there's varsity.